Payments Podcast from Bottom Line.
Greetings and welcome to the Payments Podcast. My name is Jacqueline Powell and I'll be your host for this episode that takes stock of the various and substantive changes in the payments infrastructure all over the world, but particularly in the UK and the EU, where instant payments and other infrastructure evolutions will require the attention and execution of banks as well as corporates. To track these changes and their implications, I have two fantastic guests joining me today. So first, let me introduce my colleague, Frédéric Viard from our Swiss office. Fred is head of commercial product management, and he specializes in cross-border payments and financial messaging here at Bottomline. He's responsible for driving and leading business initiatives globally around payments, multi-channel connectivity, cloud-based solutions, and fraud protection. Welcome, Fred.
Thank you, Jackie, and hello, everyone. Very happy to have this discussion today about the very hot topic, which is ISO 20022.
Indeed. So next up, we have a friend of the Payments Podcast and one of the most influential authorities in UK payments industry, and that's Mike Chambers. He has held several C-level roles throughout his career. From 2004 to 2018, Mike served as the Chief Executive Officer at Bax Payment Systems Limited, which happens to be the largest retail payment systems in the UK, for those of you who don't know. And during his tenure at Bax, Mike also acted as the CEO of the UK's systemically important RTGS payment system, commonly known as CHAPS, and established the payment system operator as its first chief executive to operate the UK's faster payment scheme. Mike has been an integral part of several industry initiatives which have led to the new payments architecture or NPA vision, including request to pay and confirmation of payee, the regulatory endorsed merger of the UK's retail payment schemes, as well as the formation of PayUK. Having successfully merged Bax into PayUK, Mike has developed an impressive portfolio, including roles as chairman, payments advisor, non-exec director, and ambassador. He also publishes a newsletter, one to subscribe to, by the way, called Payments Unpacked, which provides an informed insight into the UK's retail payment landscape. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you so much for that introduction. I almost recognised it was me you were talking about there. So thank you for that very kind introduction. Thank you also for inviting me on the podcast today. It's a real privilege to be part of this discussion around ISO 20022. So I'm looking forward to our discussion with Fred. You mentioned my Payments Unpacked newsletter. You can subscribe at payments-unpacked.com. And if you use that URL, listeners to a Bottom Line podcast will get a free special gift if you do that. But great to be with you today.
That's great. Thank you, Mike. So, Mike, let's start with you. We have a lot to unpack today, but one of the issues that has resonated the most with our audience is, in fact, ISO 20022. We've had one major mandate pass already regarding the use of the message format, but we've got a long way to go before we reach the adoption levels that will give it the desired impact. Can you tell us a little bit about your own journey with ISO?
Yeah, sure. You know, a number of you will know me, and you'll also have heard my introduction from Jackie. But, you know, I've spent a career in payments. But what a lot of people won't know is that I started my career in correspondent banking as a teenager. And at that time, I started in payments and in banking thinking that Swift MT202s were structured messages. I thought that the inbound CHAPS payment that had just replaced the banker's payments in London were automated payments. And I was often given the acronym STP, straight through processing. And what I came to acknowledge very quickly that STP really meant straight to printer. We were receiving electronic messages, people then inputting them, re-inputting them, first checking them, second checking and releasing them. And it, when you start to think about it, it was far away from where we are today. And through my career, I've been involved in standards for payments around the Swift MT series, Standard 18, Message 8583. I'm not a techie. I've never really got involved at that technical level. But what I have grown through my career is to a real deep appreciation of the relevance and the importance of payment standards. And over the last few years, really, I've really felt we've been stuck in a loop, in a set of siloed standards that were becoming very restrictive in their nature for modern day banking. And as chief executive of BACS, I wanted to do something about that. And we established a view within BACS that if we were doing change in a brownfield environment, then we should look to see whether we could do that change in ISO 20022. But we set three triggers. The first trigger was a business case. The second was any regulation. And the third was a technical trigger. And in all those times, we never really found that one of those triggers were breached and led us to an ISO 20022 environment. But on a greenfield, I said that if we're doing something in the greenfield environment, we should be doing this in ISO 20022. And it was my real privilege, therefore, to get involved in ISO 20022 with Current Account Switching Service and the Cash ISA Transfer Service, which I launched in 2013 and 2014, respectively, and live within an ISO 20022 format. I don't know 100%, but I like to think they were the first uses of ISO 20022 in the UK. But over the last decade, it's clear there's still a long way to go in the UK. We're going to look at that later, and globally in terms of the adoption. As firms move from a receive only to a send and receive and to a send, receive and process environment. So there's still a long way to go, and people are in different places in the technical migration, but also a different understanding of the benefits and their enthusiasm. And my encouragement to people, and hopefully this will come out as a flavor as we chat today, will be that we should always be looking for looking past the infrastructure or the regulatory requirement and think, what can we do for the end user with these standards? And for me, if we're talking about structured data, hooray, we're talking about the end of 18 characters reference fields that have served us well, but really have passed their time after over half a century of use.
Fred, let's turn to you. You have the advantage of talking to organizations every day that actually use ISO 20022. How are they faring with the format, and what are they struggling with?
So first, as Mike mentioned, so we have to remember that ISO 20022 does exist for many years. This is not something which is new. But what is bringing it back to the top of the agenda is the SWIFT initiative in the context of CBPR Plus for cross-border payment with a deadline in 2025. But we have also to keep in mind that the big focus for banks is what happens at the domestic level, because most of their payments are domestic payment by nature. So this focus on the domestic regulation is probably the reason why it explains a bit the relatively slow takeoff of this CBPR Plus initiatives, because in December, we were only at 19.9% of cross-border payment over SWIFT being in ISO 20022. So there is first, the focus is on domestic, and then you look a bit for the rest. And the countries which have already moved to ISO 20022 for their domestic market, then the issue around ISO, implementing ISO, is less of a pain compared to countries where the domestic format is still a legacy format. So those who have already moved to ISO 20022 for domestic reasons, they have less of a pain to implement the cross-border part of it, because the system and the ecosystem has been already adapted to speak this ISO 20022 language. But back to your question, so the main issue that we see in general is around the how to address the richer format, because the ISO 20022 is much richer than the other formats. So what to do with these extra informations to not lose it and to be able to transport across the value chain. It's also about how to make sure that all the components around the processing is ISO compliant, because if you have one element, example sanction, which is not able to process these ISO format, then you have an issue. But it's not only about sanction, it's about the other payments such as liquidity, fraud, and so on. So this is really the full ecosystem that has to be upgraded, which is a huge task in itself. And I think there is another issue, which is about how to collect the information in ISO format from the source until the end of the processing. So it's not about in the middle of the chain you manage ISO. You have to be sure that you collect the information which is able to fill the structure of an ISO 20022. And of course, to take the control of this new format, this new language, even for the end user in the bank. So when they look at the message, the way it is written is completely different. So you have to accommodate a bit this new language at the operation level. But we, as Mike said, this is the only format which is today available for end-to-end machine-readable format. So this is something that has to be implemented to enhance automation, the straight-through processing, to reduce the operational cost, which is due to exceptions. So with this machine-readable format, we should have much less exception. It's also about improving compliance reporting because we have richer data. It's a better structure information when you look at the address, for instance, which can be quite free in the legacy format, and that will have to be structured in the future to make sure that, again, for compliance reasons, for routing reasons, you need to have all this information. And I think it's also very important because any new initiative, if you look at instant payment and many others, they are built on ISO 20022. So this is the language that will percolate across the full ecosystem. So as the soonest you are ready to speak this language and to have all the systems involved in the processing being ISO native, then you will have make a big step. So this is something, this is a step that has to be made if we want to enhance the full marketplace to more automation, less exceptions, and more transparency at the end of the day.
Thank you, Fred. Staying with you then, the EU recently acted on its regulations to codify the usage of instant payments. Can you tell us why ISO 20022 is so important for the banks and corporates to embrace as they reckon with these new regulations, which will, of course, mandate the speed and cost of instant payments?
So instant payment in the EU is live for many years. I think it went live in 2017. So it is not something which is new. And natively, it has been designed over ISO 20022 because it's the, let's say, the next step following SEPA, the standard SEPA, which was already in ISO 20022. This is one of the, maybe not the first, but one of big step across the world where a full marketplace has moved to ISO 20022 for the payment. So it's a bigger, it's a big move for a marketplace. But the usage of instant payment so far was extremely low, probably due to higher cost in some cases for an instant payment, and also depending on the type of business that the bank is performing. So if you are an asset manager, maybe you are less interested in having ISO 20022 for payment. And some others needs to build a business case as well. So, but what is new with this instant payment initiative in Europe is that it will become mandatory for those banks operating in the EU and which are proposing to the standard SEPA payment in the euro currency. Then everyone will have to be able to receive instant payment, of course, in ISO 20022 format by January 25 and nine more months to be able to send them. So the issue with instant payment is not really about the, let's say, the 10 seconds that we always mention for the speed of this payment. The standard as well is not such an issue because, again, SEPA is already on ISO 20022, but the main issue is probably around the availability, which has to be 24/7. But again, everything which has been developed recently is built on ISO 20022. So it's really about moving to an ecosystem which is ISO 20022 native to be able to, let's say, to accommodate these new initiatives, whatever they are, instant payment or whatever they are in the security space as well. So you need to have a native ecosystem to be able to process all these ISO 20022 messages, exchanges, let's say the more frictionless, the more seamlessly that you can. But if you look at IP, instant payment, we see that all the initiatives around the world are in ISO format. So it will become the de facto standard that has to be embraced at one point by everyone, because this will be the new language that will ensure interoperability. But again, this is a major uplift of the ecosystem. It requires an intense testing, because you can control what you will send as a format in ISO 20022, but you cannot control what you will receive. So testing ISO 20022 is very a key element, because you have to be sure that you cope with most of the use cases that you will send and receive in the future.
Thanks, Fred. Mike, over to you. What is the current state of play with ISO mandates and usage in the UK, and what needs to happen to drive more of its adoption in the UK specifically?
Okay, so we've looked globally, we've looked at Europe, and now let's look at the United Kingdom. You know, I mentioned earlier on that first off the blocks were cash ISA and current account switching a decade ago. Since then, we've seen the Bank of England's RTGS renewal program introduced based on an architecture that's ISO 20022 enabled. And we've, Fred's already been talking about the crucial and criticality of cross-border payments and SWIFT and the transition to ISO 20022. But once we've done that, we've still got 10 billion retail payments per annum stuck in Standard 18 and Message 85-83 silos. They're old standards, they're standalone and proprietary standards as well. And I think our move and our need to move to ISO 20022 in the UK is paramount. The vision behind the new payments architecture is ISO 20022 based. So I think my answer to the question was, what's the biggest thing that needs to happen? It's we've got to unblock the MPA impasse. And whether that's through MPA as envisaged, whether it's through Faster Payments 2.0, I probably don't really care, to be honest. I think we just need an ISO 20022 retail-based infrastructure, because if we can migrate to that point, we can have the real benefits of structured data. We can use the functionality to detect, have better detection for authorized push payment fraud. We can think about different flavors or types of payments outside of the single immediate payment that we currently use today. We can talk about interoperability with our real-time payment system and RTGS. Think about use of purpose codes, of legal entity identifiers, and rail substitution, where we can move transactions from RTGS to instant and vice versa. And if we're really going to unblock the benefits of open banking, we have to have the functionality and the depth of the ISO standard. So I think for the UK, it's this desperate need to move to an ISO 20022 standard. We've talked about the standard for over a decade. We've talked about MPA for almost a decade. The UK is falling behind other countries and other geographies. And we need to get on with it with a tangible journey towards ISO 20022 for our retail payments.
And just to add on top of that, I completely agree with you, Mike, because this is not really the point to know if this is the instant payment that will be on ISO or the cross-border or whatever. I think it's about the full ecosystem that has to be, let's say, interoperable in ISO, because at the end of the day, depending on the use case, you will make a payment which is an instant payment, but it can be an RTGS. It depends of the use cases. So I think it's if you want to ensure full interoperability, you have to be with the same language, whatever the rail you use at the end of the day.
Mike, I'm going to stay with you for a second. So just on the back of what you said, let's widen that lens a little bit. And then Fred, I'll come back to you on interoperability issues with instant payments in a sec. Mike, do you think that ISO 20022 is on its way to being accepted and used globally? Do you see any momentum for its usage? Can it become a single, widely used standard? Or are there interoperability issues, as we have been discussing, to overcome?
Yeah, interesting question. I mean, my previous answer, I sort of looked at the UK because this gives me a chance to look globally. I don't think it's what I think. I think it's about what we can see happening. You know, we've got, in terms of momentum, in terms of embracing ISO 20022 standard, we've got SWIFT Live, Target 2, Euro 1 CHAP, some great case studies there. If we think about the developments in other RTGSs around the world, CHIPS and CHATS and Fed are all looking in the US, Hong Kong, and US are looking to adopt ISO 20022. Payments Canada is absolutely set on the standard. When I'm out talking to people out in the Middle East, right across that region, ISO 20022, just do it. It's just the given that it's going to happen. And of course, domestically in Australia with the new payments platform, we've seen that based on this particular standard. So a question that says, is the standard like to be accepted, used globally? Is it gaining momentum? We don't need to take my word for it. We can look at all those countries, all those geographies, all those regions. They're just getting on with it and implementing it. And I'm going to show my age a little bit here now, but in 1979, there was a pop band called Pop Music, called M. They released a song called Pop Music, and they sang New York, London, Paris, Munich. Everybody's talking about pop music. Well, I think here we could be saying Australia, UK, US, Europe, everybody's talking about ISO 20022. It is just the thing that everybody is doing. Interoperability is always a challenge, isn't it? You know, we think about that. And you've certainly got absolutely much more chance of interoperability when you've moved away from bespoke, proprietary, old legacy siloed standards. Rich standard data, party data, dedicated reference fields, you know, great attributes for interoperability. You know, we've seen the work within Swift and HVPS Plus, where they're looking to define a global implementation framework and a message standard for cross-border payments. There's a real cross-country effort there to do that. I mentioned before Middle East, but certainly across the MENA region, those countries are really looking about how they can gain interoperability, both in the instant rails and the RTGS rails. And, you know, interesting in interoperability, you know, what if one system goes down and another one's up? Back as far as 2020, the Bank of England issued a discussion paper on CHAPS as a retail alternative, and some real thinking there about, in a time of crisis when a payment system's out, how you might be able to switch between systems. And as a former CEO of a systemically important payment system, what a great thing to have in your back pocket if you need it. So I think there's plenty of evidence out there for evidence of a real migration and enthusiasm and an embracing of this new standard.
Which is really encouraging. Thanks, Mike. Fred, do you see any interoperability issues as the EU adds some fuel to its instant payments journey?
I believe that the purpose of this IP regulation, which is an extension, this is an amendment of the SEPA existing regulation. This is not a new, brand new regulation. This is an amendment of the existing one. But it's about exactly avoiding or removing the fragmentation of the market by ensuring interoperability across the Eurozone for instant payments. So the purpose, the goal, is really to reduce as much as possible the interoperability issues that might happen across different EU countries. And note as well that many countries in the EU already have an IP scheme in place at the domestic level. The mandate from the European Parliament is really to make sure that this instant payment can be available for payment across the full EU. So this is really about avoiding fragmentation and making sure that there is less pain around interoperability for instant payment across the EU. However, in terms of interoperability issue, the SEPA INST mandate, the instant payment for EU, it mandates to put in place a mechanism which is verification of paying, very close to the confirmation of paying in the UK. And this part, which is still under consultation until May, has to be really taken with care to ensure interoperability of these mechanisms across the EU. So this is really something which I think there is a focus to be put on these mechanisms to ensure a full interoperability of instant payment. This is not really about the standard or about the mandate. It's really about the surrounding mechanisms that are required to make this instant payment across the EU, to make sure that these mechanisms are interoperable between themselves.
Thank you. So moving on from that instant payments discussion, really you've touched on this a bit in the points that you've raised, but let's talk a little bit more about cross-border payments.
So we mentioned CBPR Plus in cross-border payment as being the initiative from Swift to make ISO 20022 the standard used for cross-border payment in the future for payment. There is no mandate for securities. It's really about the payment messages. But any other initiatives which are in the correspondent banking, let's say, or in the cross-border payment, whatever they are based on blockchain, pre-funded stuff or remittances or whatever, any new initiatives, they are built on this ISO 20022 format. So this is really a key component, a building block to achieve what we would like to achieve in terms of speed, in terms of transparency, in terms of compliance, in terms of fraud protection. So this is one element to achieve the final landscape that we would like to reach around frictionless payment, whatever they are, domestic or cross-border. So ISO is really an important element in this context because it will help to achieve all of that: transparency, richer information, more notification, less failure, enhanced sanction screening, easier compliance reporting, etc. So really, ISO 20022 is an important building block, but it is not the only one. So this is something which is part of the overall strategy. And this is, let's say, the basic requirement is to speak the same languages and to have the same information, the same blocks of information that are transported either domestically or at the cross-border level.
Thanks, Fred. Mike, let's turn to one of the changes I alluded to in my introduction, and that's the Bank of England's Real-Time Gross Settlement Service, or RTGS as it's commonly referred to. So I'm reading from the Bank of England site right now, and it describes RTGS as, and bear with me here, the infrastructure that holds accounts for banks, building societies, and other institutions. The balances in these accounts can be used to move money in real time between these account holders. This delivers final and risk-free settlement. A program of work has been established to deliver a renewed real-time gross settlement service, as set out in the blueprint, as well as replicating the functionality provided today. The new RTGS service will deliver a range of new features and capabilities for payments and settlements between financial institutions. Now, can you tell us what these new features and capabilities will be?
Yeah, sure. We can see from that quote, the Bank of England are going through a renewal program. It's the renewal of the underlying technology that runs the bank's central bank's real-time gross settlement system. But in giving you a real answer to your question, I'm probably going to mix a little bit of RTGS as the infrastructure that the central bank offers and the CHAP scheme as the retail RTGS payments scheme that's offered to users, whether they're banks or consumers here in the UK. I think sometimes it's helpful to mix that benefit. What we can see is that this ISO standard is a foundation stone or a keystone of the bank's transformation and is really the bedrock of everything they're trying to do. Now, in terms of benefits, there are some sort of things that you'd expect anybody to say, not least a central bank. And if you look at the Bank of England's website, they talk about an infrastructure that has a greater resilience. And that ability, that resilience, you sort of expect them to say that, but the ability to deal with technical issues, quicker and smoother recovery from difficult times, and a more robustness to deal with extreme events. They're sort of things you would expect. You wouldn't expect the Bank of England to do anything else. They talk about improved access, but that's going to have a very narrow application across a number of firms. And they talk about a wider interoperability, the ability to detect fraud, look at AML capabilities and increase straight-through processing. Now, they're the sort of things you'd expect anybody to say, not least a central bank. But when you start digging deeper into what the mix of the RTGS and CHAPS renewal program will give, we're going to see the opportunity for the liquidity savings mechanism that I was responsible for when I was CEO at CHAPS being extended to lower liquidity costs. Now, it's all very well saying you can have greater access, but actually, if you have greater access and more efficient liquidity capabilities and therefore lower liquidity costs, that starts to get interesting for a firm. And technically, the new system will have the capability for longer opening hours to a move to near 24/7. The bank are very clear that won't be from day one, but there's an opportunity there for an elongated day, which if you think about follow the sun, if you think about different markets and RTGS openings, you think about CLS capability, having longer open hours will spread our wings in terms of hours and operating hours in other countries, particularly where the UK is placed in the globe. We also see stuff from the Bank of England about the ability to enhance payment and liquidity data through API enablement. So institutions being able to control their liquidity and identify payments that are going through and where they are in the chain, and doing that outside of a dashboard, doing that outside of an inquiry link, and doing that in an API environment, and the benefits that gives. And we start thinking from a consumer level, we start to see being able to use tags in those payments to identify critical payments or priority payments. You know what it's like. It's Friday afternoon, it's 1 o'clock and you're waiting to move house and your solicitor says, well, it's in the system somewhere. And nobody really knows what that chap's payment is. And then suddenly it flies out at the end and then you rush to change your keys. We could identify house payments in those transfers, and not only ability to prioritize them, but to track them through. And then the solicitor could actually understand where that payment is in the chain. And I'm not sure how many vulnerable customers use CHAPS, for example, but if they do, if there are payments that are particularly for vulnerable consumers being processed through RTGS, what about putting a priority tag in on there and getting that there as quickly as it possibly could? We're going to see payment tracking going on, so enabling institutions to forecast their cash, liquidity profiling, making things more efficient, looking at structured remittance data. And I don't mean that giving an envelope and throw whatever data we want in that envelope, but doing it in adding information in a very structured way, dealing with exceptions, helping reconciliations. We look at ways of reducing fraud around the use of legal entity identifier and purpose codes. So as you start to dig down, there are the sort of things that are sort of motherhood and apple pie that you'd expect anybody to say in an RTGS environment or any payment system environment. But you start digging and you start to find, look for efficiency, whether it's payments, whether it's liquidity, whether it's consumer proposition. And this goes back to a theme that from the previous bottom line webinar on ISO 20022 around going native. I think the whole message as institutions look at ISO, they look at the RTGS in the UK with CHAPS, is just go native, don't translate, because you'll only get the full real benefits of these new systems and these new standards when you treat it as a native, rather than trying to mask the problem or mask the change with a former translation.
Thanks, Mark. Fred, I think on the back of that, can you share with us what the intersection of RTGS and ISO 20022 looks like? I mean, do they actually go together?
Yes. So RTGS payment, they are payment like others. So they have... They exist to build some business cases. They are usually high value payments, but the requirements are the same that for any other payments. And many countries have already moved their RTGS system in ISO format. So yes, it goes very well together. What is also interesting to note is that compared to cross-border payments, domestic RTGS payment on ISO, you look at Target 2 in Europe or SIC in Switzerland or many other examples, they are mandated by the regulator. So this is something which is not on a voluntary basis, such as it is for CBPR plus cross-border, where there is an interim period that when you have some different flavor on how you use different standard. So the RTGS, they are migrated in one go. So it's a big bang migration, which is a bit more risky in itself, but it avoids fragmentation. So there is a difference between something which is, you have to go to ISO 20022. So there is this is a mandate. So the banks are much more, let's say, quick to adapt. This is really a requirement because this is domestic again. So this is really their core environment has to comply with that. So it's really something which goes very well with ISO 20022, like other payment type. But again, so for RTGS, let's say most of the time it is on a big bang basis, which makes the move much quicker with everyone being the line. So it reduces the risk of fragmentation and so on.
I have one last question, gentlemen, and I'd like to focus that on the future. So, Mark, you first. In the UK, we have a lot of changes happening right now, and we'll eventually get to one of your passion projects, as you mentioned earlier, which is the new payments architecture. But if you were a UK bank, corporate, or a payment service provider, what are the most important changes to plan for over the next 1 to 3 years?
I think that, you know, there's always loads of change going on. You know, I think all through my career on payments, it's been this cry of there's too much change. And I would just say it was ever thus. You know, there will always be lots going on. I think I've got a couple of things to mention and a plea. I think my plea is for as an industry, we stop sort of a plea to a regulator in sort of an Oliver Twist-esque mode. Please, sir, can I have some more time? You know, we really need to get on with these things. I certainly think Joe's Gardner's report at the back end of last year called for the regulators to think about simplification, think about clarity, thinking about, you know, the way that we could try and organize ourselves as an industry a little bit better. And I think there's certainly an expectation that we'll see some of that simplification and clarity from the strategy and vision from HM Treasury later this year. But against that bit of a cheeky answer, I think my three things would be: the first thing for firms is to get on board with infrastructure and regulatory change. Don't push these things out to the long grass and come to the party late. You just end up in a logjam of trying to get over the line. The second is, in a similar vein, as we hopefully see some unblocking of the impasse on new payments architecture or faster payments 2.0, don't just get those projects or that project over the line, but think about the benefits you can exploit for your users and your customers. You know, under faster payments 2.0 and new faster payments, the types and flavors of payments that you could offer your customers on a faster payment. So the second is be ready. And the third is, you know, just let's resolve to continually frustrate the fraudster. You know, do that with minimal friction. Focus on pre-event and in-flight events. Don't resort or default to the post-event reimbursement model. And just because thwarting the fraudster feels like a game of whack-a-mole, don't give up.
Great advice. Thanks, Mike. Fred, how about the EU? We're really at the beginning, if you like, of an important era in the continent's payments journey, aren't we?
I don't think we are at the beginning of a new era. I think it's more about an acceleration of the transformation than the beginning of a transformation. The journey started several years ago with the introduction of SEPA, which was really a milestone, because we have to keep in mind that the EU has this specificity to be a cross-border market sharing the same currency and some common rules. So you have to accommodate everyone across the EU to have something which is not fragmented. So there is an acceleration to establish a true single payment area, which is triggered partially by the instant payment regulation, because since you will have to accommodate these IP regulations to make sure that everyone can be reached across the EU with instant payment and can send instant payment. So this is something that will really accelerate the consolidation across the EU for payment. This is already the case with the SEPA standard payment, but it will accelerate with the instant payment. We have also to keep in mind that ISO 20022 is really a key element, but it is not, let's say, it is not the same ISO for everyone. So you have different flavors, different rule book, depending on where you have to go. So there is still some work to do inside ISO 20022 to make it fully interoperable. And initiatives which are mandating the usage across a region or across several regions to share the same rules and the same way of handling payments will help to avoid fragmentation, which is one of the aim across the EU, is to have a seamless, frictionless payment area across the EU for standard payment, RTGS payment, ACH payment, and instant payment.
Thanks, Fred. Well, gentlemen, that's a wrap. So, Mike, Fred, thank you for your insights on ISO 20022. And to our audience, thank you for listening. For more industry advice and guidance, you can connect with us directly or listen in future to one of the episodes on SoundCloud, Apple, or Spotify. Until next time.
Payments Podcast from Bottom Line.